everyone, and welcome to Minute 36 of Season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg classic Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again this season, this week, is Emily, the flapper dame. Welcome back to the show, Emily.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on here. It's going to be so cool to talk about this film, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm actually very looking forward to hearing your thoughts on it. For some reason, you don't seem the type of person who would, be a fan of this movie. So I'm very curious to know, like, what's your background with this movie?
Okay, well, anything World War II related is actually very real and raw to me because my grandfather fought in World War II. And for someone in my age bracket, being I was born in 1996, that's not really a thing. That's not very common for people my age to have their grandparents, their grandfather in World War II. Usually it's people who are my age, it's like their great grandfather who they never met or something like that. But for me, I spent a lot of time with my grandfather when he was still with us. And anything like this is very, like, I didn't grow up watching this movie a whole lot, but anything like this, the emotion is very raw and real to me.
Mm-hmm. Did you by any chance see this with your grandfather at any point?
No, I did not.
Okay. So, like, you don't know his perspective on World War II movies or things like that?
Well, not this one. Some of them, I do know for a fact he went to see Tora, Tora, Tora in theaters in 1970. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact he liked The Longest Day. But yeah, I really don't know his opinion on this one. But
okay. I thought maybe you would. That was it. Do you remember where he fought? Did he fight in the Pacific or in the European?
No, he was in Battle of the Bulge. He was in Europe, stationed in Europe. He was in the 99th Infantry Division. And he did not openly like to talk about World War II that much. But when he did, he would answer your questions. And he would, but carefully. He would talk about it very carefully. And I know what he told me when I asked him questions. It was all censored for a child's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, it is understandable, but it's on the one hand understandable, on the other hand unfortunate, because, you know.
Yes, because I would ask him totally different questions today if I got the chance. Like, right. Just better questions, more insightful questions.
Right. Okay, I mean, makes sense.
Yeah.
All right, so minute 36 begins with Bryce listening and ends with a soldier getting ready to shave.
Yeah.
So we last week we talked all about the main purpose of, you know, how the story snowballs and how this whole idea came around. And today, you know, for the first half of this minute, we get the tail end of that. Mm-hmm. And you know, at this point, we hear Marshall say, "That boy is alive." And mm-hmm. but before he says that, I mean, we first get just various shots of the different officers in the room. So we have, you know, Bryan Cranston, the playing Bryce, who just is looking on in this somber moment, and then a few seconds later, we have David Wall, who plays Captain Sanders, you know, also just listening to what's going on and, you know, just like taking in the room. And then we get a shot of Dale Dye, who we don't really know this character's name. He's the general's aide. He's also a colonel. You know, all three of them had their say over the last few days as to over last week of the whole situation and stuff like that. But here they're all just giving us these 15 seconds of silence as they're waiting for Marshall to finally make his decision. And then, you know, we get Harv Presnell again. And at this point, he just looks at them and goes, "That boy is alive." We're going to send somebody to find him, and we're going to get him the hell out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we hear two of the men. We can't really tell which of the two of the three actually respond, but they say, yes, sir, yes, sir.
Yeah.
You know, and I like the way that they do this. It's, you know, last week we heard all the arguments, I guess you could say, and now we finally get the decision, you know, where Marshall is just, you know, looking around, and he's finally made this decision, you know, that this is what he's going to be doing. We will find a unit that is going to find this young Private Ryan and get him the hell out of there.
Yes.
And I mean, it's a great bookend for this whole section of the movie where they discuss, you know, basically the premise of the movie. I mean, actually, the lines that he says right here are the premise of the movie. We're going to send somebody to find him and get him out of there. You know, that's what it comes down to.
The defining moment where, you know, things are about to happen and take off.
Yep, for sure. And, you know, all of these actors, I mean, we talked a lot about them last week, but all of them do give great performances here. Even though they're all recognizable and well-known actors, but they all have little bit parts here that just to play this little gap. You know, I always love seeing Dale Dye in movies. You know, ever since I first saw him in Platoon, you know, he always shows up in these type of movies, you know, because he's, yeah, I mean, you know who Dale Dye is, right?
I probably know his face more than his name.
Okay. So, I mean, basically he created a company that basically does the training of actors in soldier roles in movies. You know, he formed a company in the late 80s doing that. You know, he was someone who knew Oliver Stone, and Oliver Stone had him already for Platoon, you know, do accurate training for actors in order for them to basically understand how they should be acting as, you know, as soldiers. So he runs like these boot camps and stuff like that for them. So it's always great that he has all of these little cameos in a lot of the movies. You know, he's here. He's in Band of Brothers. He's in what other movies? He's been in a whole bunch of movies over the years. Like I said, he was in Platoon. So it's always fun just watching him pop up
mm-hmm.
along the way. And then the shot changes, and we're back on the beach or around the beach. And we see a whole bunch of soldiers in troop carriers, and some of them walking, you know, marching. And then on the screen, it says Omaha Beach, D-Day plus +3. All right. Yeah. So basically that means that we are up to, this is June 9th, 1944, you know, 3 days after the D-Day invasion itself. You know, everything that happened on, you know, in Normandy that we've spent the last, basically the last 6 weeks talking about, you know, the storming of the beach. So, you know, it's great. Now, do you know the idea behind the term D-Day? Do you know like where that possibly, like what it means?
Well, I know that it was also called Operation Overlord, but I doesn't it refer to, oh my gosh, I once I get off of this, it's gonna hit me like, oh my god, I should have known that. But actually, the term D-Day, no.
So the term itself basically is not just you know, the D-Day that we all know about from World War II. D-Day is a common military term for the day where there is an attack or operation that's to be initiated.
Designated day.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it just
right. And again, there, you know, most people when most people nowadays hear D-Day, they're obviously thinking about June 6th, 1944. But D-Day could refer to any other day when there was operations that were being done, because you have D-Day, H hour, and then you know, so you would say like H minus 3 means 3 hours before H hour, or D plus 3 is 3 days after D-Day, which is what we're talking about here, obviously, you know, in order just to give an idea of when something is specifically, you know, taking place. There were other battles during World War II that had different designations of days. Like, for instance, the Battle of Leyte in the Pacific was known as A-Day, and the Battle of Okinawa was known as L-Day. Obviously, I don't know why that was A-Day and why that was L-Day, because it would make more sense that the Battle of Leyte would be L-Day. But you know, those are the designations that they decided to use, and you know, what can we do about that? And during World War One, they even referred to days that were known as D-Day. On September 7th, 1918, they sent out, you know, orders that the First Army will attack at H hour on D-Day with the object of forcing the evacuation of Saint Mihail Salient. You know, that type of thing. So I guess it's sort of explaining, you know, without saying what the, I guess if you call June 6th D-Day, so then, you know, people won't, the enemy won't necessarily know what day you're referring to. Maybe that's also part of it. It's the idea of the code of, you know, referring to a day like that or something like that. And so basically these characters, you know, just moving across the screen, we see basically there's a lot going on. You know, it's a very, very busy day. And then we, you know, it's basically a long shot. And then we get a closer shot and we see a small troop carrier run across the screen. And I don't know if you looked at what's written on this troop carrier as it goes by, but on the right hand side of this carrier is stenciled on, and it says, "Caution, left hand drive." Do you have any idea what that would mean?
So in Europe, a lot of times they, well, actually overseas, they have a different, like they drive on the left side of the road, and in America we drive on the right side of the road.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I never even thought about it that you know, they would, that the idea was is that, you know, all of these vehicles were in England, so therefore they had to have painted on them, you know, so that anyone who sees them will know that this is, you know, that the person driving the car is on the left-hand side of the car as opposed to the right-hand side, which is what they would be used to, you know, when they would be looking at a car and stuff like that. So again, this is another great example in this movie of detail.
Yes.
You know, you would think, okay, we're filming a movie. Who cares? Why does it need to be authentic? But it is, and it's just great. I love seeing that, how they have that on there.
And it's such a small detail that maybe you wouldn't even think about, but the fact that they took time to put it in there, it really hammers that it was very well researched.
Yes, for sure. And did you notice that there's like a little sign on the right-hand side of the screen where it says COS32, Second Ranger?
I saw something, but it was so small, I didn't get a chance to actually like look at it. But yes, right. I did see something. Yes.
Right. So, I mean, basically, it's just a sign telling everyone that this is where the commanding officer of the Second Rangers is, you know, which is very important because, you know, we know that Miller and his men are part of the Second Rangers. So, you know, they're just showing us that right now he's about to get to the you know, to the command post, where the commander of his unit is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then the, you know, after this troop carrier moves by, we see a Jeep drive by, and then another troop carrier also has the stenciled on the back about the left hand. And as that second troop carrier goes by, we see Miller cross the street, you know, walking towards this command post. And as he gets there, one of the guys stands up, I guess, to greet him. And then we see a lieutenant Lieutenant Colonel in the background talking on a phone, and we can hear what he's saying. And he starts saying, "We expected 32 tanks to float to the beach. 27 didn't make it." So, I mean, we talked about this a few weeks ago, the fact that they had all these amphibious tanks that ended up sinking. You know, they didn't even make it. Apparently, there was a flaw in the way that they were made, that none of them managed to make it onto the beach. So, you know, here he's talking about the fact that, you know, only five of them actually made it onto the beach.
So. Yeah.
And then as Miller is walking into this command post, he introduces himself and says, "Miller, Charlie Company." And so the soldier that's there says, "Go on in, Captain." And then we get a closer shot of the whole command post, which I love how they have the camouflage netting above it. You know, you can see that this is around one of the areas where the Germans were using. You know, these were their part of their bunkers that they were using to shoot at the Allies as they were coming up the beach. So they've turned this into I guess a little paradise, a little paradise in Normandy for the commanding officer of the Second Rangers. Because yeah. because if you look around, you can see some really interesting things here that you wouldn't normally find, you know, in the field, which obviously we'll mention a few of these things there, because you know, first of all, we see that you see that there are some boxes on the, you know, on the right hand side of the screen, and they're holding up things. They're basically being used, I guess, as a pseudo table to hold things up, and those boxes are actually K ration boxes. Because they say on them K5, and do you know anything about the history of K rations?
No, not really.
Okay, so the idea was is that you know, they had three separately boxed types of meals. They had breakfast, dinner, and supper, and the idea was originally just for airborne troops, tank crews, motorcycle couriers, and other mobile forces that were going places for short durations, and it ended up becoming a lot more than what they had thought. And they have different types of rations. You had A rations, B rations. A rations were fresh food. B rations were packaged unprepared food. C rations were prepared canned foods. D rations had military chocolate and emergency rations with them. So in 1941, they decided that they were going to find a way to create ready-to-eat meals that you can put into, you know, basically your pocket and then use it later on. And the guy who thought of this idea, his name was Ansel Keys, which is, again, why it is called K rations. Because it's named after him. So what he did is he went to the supermarket to try and find inexpensive foods that would still provide enough energy for the soldiers along the way. So he bought biscuits and dry sausage and hard candy and chocolate bars, and then he created a menu basically that had that was a balanced meal with these things for the, for the soldiers. And he found a way to make it that it's palatable, and the type of idea that it's, better than nothing, type of canned or of a meal for soldiers who, you know, depending on their the situations where they were in, they would, they would still want to eat it because it would relieve hunger and still provide sufficient energy for them.
Oh, it's just interesting because I knew that all those foods were eaten by the soldiers. I just didn't know that that's what they referred to as the ration, the K rations, like mm-hmm. that.
Right.
It's just very interesting because that's what my grandfather said that they would eat. They would eat like the biscuits and the everything that was ready or available to go in your pocket, basically. And My grandfather was actually quite lucky because his sister would send him and his brother both care packages constantly, so they always had extra rations, and he always credited that extra rations from his sister as one of the reasons why he survived.
Oh wow.
Yes.
Interesting. So I mean that we talked before that there are people who say that it's named K rations after the guy who thought of this type of meal, but Ansel Keys, but there's also the idea that it just phonetically it worked because it was it was mostly used by commandos because the idea was okay, you can get 15 meals and take that with you on a short little excursion or whatever it is, that you would have this over a period of 5 days or whatever it is. But there's also claims that it's because it was just phonetically used, that that was the next letter that needed to be used. So maybe it was just a coincidence that they used it for that, that they gave it the K designation and stuff like that. So yeah, and then we get to hear a lot of the discussion that this lieutenant colonel is having on the phone. We can see who plays him. Are you familiar with the actor who plays him?
I don't see, I'm better with faces than I am with names.
Okay, all right. It's Dennis Farina plays Lieutenant Colonel Anderson. That's the character's name.
Okay.
And he continues, and we can hear him say, "But if we don't offload those dual drive Shermans by 0600, we're going to have an entire division stuck at Carrollton with its pants around its ankles." "Well, you let me know then." And then he continues and says, "Have Charlie Company hold at." And then he gets cut off while he's talking. But I mean, what's really interesting is while we're hearing him say all this stuff, so we get to watch how Miller is reacting to everything that's going on. I mean, there's going to be more that he's going to react to tomorrow also. But
Yes.
he takes off his helmet and starts looking around and what's going on here. We see in the background a whole bunch of soldiers that are just hanging out, basically. Some in the command post and also behind Miller. There are a whole bunch of soldiers that are just, moseying around, getting ready, I guess, for their next assignment. And then the camera zooms in a little bit on Miller's face, and then we see for just 2 seconds in this minute. Again, tomorrow we'll talk more about it. We see a soldier who is getting ready to give himself a shave, which you can see actually the steam coming out of the bucket of, or the little dish of water or whatever it
Yes.
is, basically telling us that the stuff that these guys are getting in this command post are a little different than what Miller and his men are probably being allowed to deal with, just as the regular grunts and stuff like that. As we see the soldier putting the razor in the hot water, the minute ends. So, did you have anything else that you wanted to say about this minute that
No, not really.
Okay. All right. So, every Monday we have a segment called Maestro Monday, where my guest will give their top five John Williams musical scores. So, Emily, why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up?
Okay, number five actually is Saving Private Ryan, with the music. I think John Williams is just a great choice to do the score and the soundtrack for this because it just provides that depth of emotion that you need. Number four is Lincoln, the 2012 movie Lincoln, which I think is become on its way to becoming one of those classic movies. I think, like, in the future, if you go to an exhibit about Lincoln, I think maybe you could hear this music in the background of the exhibit. One day, I think it will happen. Number three is Jaws. That was the first ever John Williams music that I probably heard, but did not know his name was attached at the time. And I didn't even watch Jaws when I was little. I just knew the tune, the theme tune. Number two is The Cowboys, 1972. It's such a surprise that John Williams scored The Cowboys, because that's, I feel like it's an underrated title in his discography of films that he did. And number one is Home Alone, because that was the first score, like the name John Williams, that I could attach his name to was Home Alone. And whenever I hear that score, it's Christmas, it's childhood, it's the 90s. It's just very iconic to me.
Oh, wow. Very cool. All right, excellent. Yeah. Thank you very much for that list. That is great. Would you like to tell everyone where they can find you?
Okay, I have my film blog at theflapperdamefilm.wordpress.com, and I'm on YouTube as The Flapper Dame, Emily G in parentheses. And then I'm on Twitter or X at flapperdame16, and on Instagram at the same handle. So.
All right, great. And finding me is very simple. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. Send me an email to movierobminute@movierob.net, or you can go visit my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this.